Do you know how Tom Clancy got like super famous? Have you ever heard the story of how he got famous?
No, I have not.
So this was back in the 80s, Ronald Reagan's president, and Ronald Reagan gets a copy of The Hunt for the Red October, like early, you know, edition. I think maybe even first edition. And he's stepping out of Marine One, going to the White House, and he has the book in his hand, and the press corps is there. And they, what are you reading there? And he holds it up and he goes, Tom Clancy, Hunt for the Red October. This is my kind of yarn right here. You know, the next day it goes on the national bestseller list because everybody wants to check it out. So, but what's interesting about that book is it was almost, it was kind of commissioned by the Naval Academy for him to write it. So is it propaganda? Yeah, it's propaganda. The Hunt for the Red October is definitely propaganda. Was the Ronald Reagan story a setup?
Probably.
I'm going to say, yeah, it was. But that's how Tom Clancy's career pretty much started after that. And then now we have, I don't know how many movies. And the latest one just came out, Without Remorse, with Michael B. Jordan. Now, had you heard about this one before? Or
no, actually, I am completely unfamiliar with Tom Clancy novels. And you can throw something at me a little later, and that's fine. I don't blame you. But I remember when you were excited at work, you know, like, oh my God, Amazon's going to release, you know, Without Remorse.
Yes.
And then you showed me the trailer and I was like, holy crap, that looks good. But the story about Tom Clancy doesn't surprise me. I mean, the government does that all the time.
Yes.
The DOD buys patriotism left and right. Yeah. And what I mean by that, and you can use that as a big example. For me, the biggest example was, the national anthem at football games, baseball games, hockey games, basketball games. When do you remember the first seeing the spectacle of a national anthem on television for a sporting event?
I don't know, like what, Super Bowl, they play every year before the Super Bowl, like when?
Other than the Super Bowl.
NASCAR. NASCAR.
But now, like, every single game.
Yeah,
every single game has it, right? So, like, 2007, 2008, the DOD literally gave all the sporting companies, MLB, NFL, NBA, just millions of dollars to make it a spectacle.
Wow.
So, it doesn't surprise me when you tell me that story about being commissioned by the Naval Academy, because to them, that's recruiting ads.
Yes. And it was also talking trash about Russia, which has not stopped. Like, I recently did a Tom Clancy, you know, Jack Ryan binge. And except for Clear and Present Danger and a few other, it's always like Russia. Russia's always like the villain and everything. And even Without Remorse, I'm like, the Russians.
Russians.
But then there's a twist at the end that, you know, it's like, but so Without Remorse is based off of a novel by Tom Clancy. And it introduces John Clark, who in Without Remorse,
John Kelly.
Okay, I'm sorry. Spoiler alert. Is the introduction of John Kelly, who becomes John Clark. And John Clark is a character within this Jack Ryan universe. And he's been played by Willem Dafoe in Clear and Present Danger and Liev Schreiber in The Sum of All Fears. Mm-hmm. I will say Michael B. Jordan's portrayal of him was the most that's John Clark. Like, that is what he needs to be. Willem Dafoe is awesome. Liev Schreiber is amazing. But the action that is required of that character, that was Michael B. Jordan did that.
And Michael B. Jordan was stout for this film. Dude. Like, he was stout.
Okay, I'm a married man. And he takes off his shirt one part of the movie, and I was like, good God, dude. I was like, how? I was like, I'm just looking at his, you know, his chest, and I'm like, geez, man. Like, he looked good in this part. And like I said, that is John Clark. That is what that character needed to be.
Like, I'm looking at him. I'm like, okay, maybe he's, because I know he's working on the next Creed movie.
Yeah.
You know, and he's the one producing and directing that movie. So I know he's in shape.
Yes.
You know what I mean? But then I didn't realize
he was in that much shape. Yeah.
Like, Jesus Christ, dude. And we're not drooling over Michael B. Jordan, but like James said, like, that's what John Clark is. Like, yes. I'm familiar with the character of John Clark, and that's his character. The action sequences in this movie required Michael B. Jordan to be that way.
Like, yeah.
That's the way he needed to be. Because if I'm not mistaken, I think he does a lot of his own stunts.
He does a lot of his own stunts. He trains for them. And of course, if you watch Creed, and of course, if you watch this movie, you can see that it's him doing a lot of the stuff.
Like, yeah.
Him doing most of the gunfire work. He falls a few times in this movie, and I was like, oh my God, like, was that him? Or just he falls from high distances in this movie. He like crashes through a window, but it looks like him. And I'm glad that they finally got this character that's come to life in a way that I was like, yes, this is really cool. So John Clark, like we said, is in all these stories. So it's based off of a book, Without Remorse, and the book is nothing like the movie. And we're gonna play a little game here. Not gonna play a little game. I'm just gonna read you a synopsis of Without Remorse. Okay, so here is the book synopsis. John Kelly, former Navy SEAL and Vietnam veteran, is still getting over the accidental death of his wife 6 months before, when he befriends a young woman with a decidedly checkered past. When that past reaches out for her in a particularly horrifying fashion, he vows revenge and, assembling all of his old skills, sets out to track down the men responsible before it can happen again. At the same time, the Pentagon is readying an operation to rescue a key group of prisoners in North Vietnamese prison of war camp. One man they find knows the terrain around the camp better than anyone else. They have a certain former Navy SEAL named John Kelly. And so right there, there's two different plots happening in the book. You have his wife dies. He's still getting over it. He meets another woman, and then her past ends up affecting his life. And now he's going to go seek revenge on them. And then at the same time, they're like, the government's like, oh, hey, by the way, we need you to go rescue these POWs. And so he does that, and you're reading the book, and you're kind of going, whoa, like, this is a whole other book of him rescuing these POWs. And it's awesome. Don't get me wrong. Tom Clancy wrote freaking amazing action. But then after that's done, then he's like, okay, back to the revenge plot. And then he goes through, and then he fakes his death at the end, and then he rises as John Clark, you know? So that's the synopsis for the book, and it was awesome. So the synopsis for the movie is very short. An elite Navy SEAL goes on a path to avenge his wife's murder, only to find himself inside of a larger conspiracy. So
they kept it very vague. Definitely very vague.
They kept it extremely vague. Like, it was such a simple, like, and I was telling Rudy right before this started, halfway through the movie, like, there's something happening. And I paused it, and then I was like, oh, this is it. Like, the rest of the movie's going to be here. Like, yeah. I mean, were you kind of taken aback that the story was that simple?
No. With most movies like that, it usually is. Because, you know, when I watch movies like Without Remorse, I immediately go back to, like, Jason Bourne, Bourne Identity.
Yeah.
Those kind of movies. And those movies, although they were completely different writers, different cinematographers, they were made different, but the storyline is somewhat similar. It's very straightforward.
Yeah.
And to the point. And that's, I was expecting that with this movie.
Ah, okay.
I was expecting the action sequences to be over the top, and they were. And I enjoyed them immensely, and that's what I enjoyed about this movie. Like I said, I'm not familiar with the books, and I think that's what makes this little episode we're doing kind of unique, because he loves these books.
Yes.
And he was I remember you were so worried when I told you I watched it. You're like, I'm not gonna watch it.
Yeah, I was like, I don't want to watch it, because so one of the reasons why I was excited, one, because Michael B. Jordan is playing John Clark, and I was like, that's the best choice they could have done. Yeah. For that. And the screenwriter is Taylor Sheridan, who wrote Sicario, mm-hmm. Sicario 2. He wrote, I'm drawing a blank right now. Oh, Hell or High Water, Wind River. And he's now producing the show Yellowstone. This dude is amazing. This guy's one of the best screenwriters out right now.
Sicario 1 and 2, amazing movies.
Yeah.
And Hell or High Water, amazing movies.
You didn't catch Wind River, did you?
I did not.
That one was a sleeper. Nobody caught that movie. And like my brother told me about it, and I remember looking at the cast. I was like, Jeremy Renner and Elizabeth Olsen? I'm like, what the hell? Jay Bernthal? I was like, what? And then I looked, and I was like, Taylor Sheridan wrote and directed it, and I watched it. I was blown away. It was amazing. So saying all that, I was excited for this movie because it seemed like the best thing to happen. And the first piece of trivia I read is they didn't use anything barely from the book. And I'm like, what is... So now begins the topic of today's podcast, book adaptations to movies. Like,
well, and staying on Without Remorse and Tom Clancy, it doesn't surprise me that they didn't use anything from the books. Because if you go back and watch the Jack Ryan series that they have with John Krasinski.
Yeah. Okay, that's where, we're going to get into that
one. You know what I mean? Like, there's no... And correct me if I'm wrong, you guys, leave us a comment, send us an email, send us a message somehow, and let me know. But if I'm not mistaken, they hardly used any material from the Jack Ryan
books. They don't use... anything from
the Jack Ryan books. They're literally, what they're doing is they're taking the source material and they're paying homage to it, but they're making their own stories with the characters.
Yeah.
And they're using his characters, the way they act and the way they portray themselves within the books, and putting them into their own story, which I think is phenomenal, because you're paying homage to Tom Clancy and his stories, but you're making it your own and you're making it modern. If you go back to the synopsis you read about the book of Without Remorse, the ex-Vietnam veteran, ex-Navy SEAL, much older John Clark back, back in the 60s, 70s. And then now you have Michael B. Jordan's, which is a very much modern John Kelly, John Clark.
Yeah.
That can really like just... awestruck people.
Awestruck. Yeah, that's the good word. That's what I was going to get to, was the Jack Ryan series. When it came out that John Krasinski was going to be playing Jack Ryan, I got excited because he's following, Alec Baldwin, Jack Ryan. Harrison Ford did two Jack Ryan movies. And then Ben Affleck did one Jack Ryan movie, The Sum of All Fears. And Ben Affleck's was supposed to be a reboot of... the stories like that was supposed to, it didn't do that well in the box office. So the Jack Ryan saga, if you may, stopped. And then Kenneth Branagh comes out a few years later with Chris Pine now as Jack Ryan. And this was the first time where they said, we're not going to use the books. We're going to just try a new story. It didn't work out. It wasn't a successful movie. And now that John Krasinski's in there and they did a whole Amazon Prime series, two seasons already, it was very apparent within the first episode that it was like, okay, they got the backstory of Jack Ryan, they got who he's about, they got the characters, but it's not The Hunt for the Red October, which is the first book.
Yeah.
And then so it's interesting how they're doing that, and like you said, it is cool that they do that, but at the same time, you're like, you got
for true Clancy fans. I understand. You got
great material, why not just use that material? And I get why shows and movies and book adaptations sometimes are not the best, because you have all this source material and you have to put in 2.5 hours, even an hour and a half movie. But now you got Amazon Prime, now you got HBO, now you got, Netflix, and you can do that.
It's different now because now we're going into the world of character-driven series that were made popular by HBO when they released The Sopranos or Rome, those early OG really cinematic episodes where you can really dive into the characters. And now we've seen it with Game of Thrones, Queen's Gambit, multiple series across all platforms. And you're right. When Amazon came out with Jack Ryan, it was a success.
It was a huge success.
Huge success. Everybody loved one. Everybody loves John
Krasinski. Everybody liked John Krasinski.
And if you don't love him, what's wrong with you?
If you don't love him, watch it, and then you're gonna fall in love with
him. Yeah. You know what? Go back and watch The Office, and then come back and watch this, and you'd be like, what?
Yeah, and he does a great job with that role. That role was made for him. Yeah.
So. Yeah, book adaptations is like the source material for Tom Clancy films is so immersive and so massive. Like it is a problem for screenwriters to kind of pack that in to an hour 45 minute 2 hour movie. Yeah. I found some of the best screen adaptations are the movies where they actually involve some of the screenwriters in the screenwriting process, or to slip some of the authors into the screenwriting process. That way you can get the actual feel of the movie. Yeah. And a lot of successful book adaptation movies have done that. Most recent one is going to be Chaos Walking with
Daisy Ridley and Tom Holland.
They actually wrote that movie. If you caught the review we did, I did a few whenever it first came out. They actually wrote that movie, made it, had to stop shooting because the studio said it was unreleasable. Hired the author to come in, make changes to the script, do some reshoots that cost them an undisclosed amount of money. After Daisy Ridley and Tom Holland got done with their respective franchises, Star Wars and Endgame.
Yeah.
And then come back and reshoot and finish the movie off and actually set it up for a sequel. If there's going to be one, I doubt that there is
probably not going to be one,
but the key that I took away from that is they brought in the original author for the books to come help finish the screenplay.
And it's one of those things, like, why not do that every single time? Like, why not? And I get it. Cause the screenwriter is like, I mean, the author is probably like, no, this is what I need.
This is how you need to tell the story.
For instance, one of a well-known book adaptation, a very successful franchise, the Harry Potter series. J.K. Rowling had told them, I think when they were doing Order of the Phoenix, like they were going through and taking like, oh, we're not going to do this. We're not going to do this. And they took Creature out, you know, the house elf. And she says, if you do that, you're going to ruin the rest of the series. Yeah. And they're like, oh, okay, never mind. And so they put him back in very, very briefly. And it's one of those things that you're like, man, like a screenwriter and the novel, the author need to always be in contact with each other. And they always, and for me, it feels like whoever wrote the novel needs to also help write that screenplay. That's my personal opinion. I mean, that's how I feel about
it. Yeah. And I 100% agree. Now the Harry Potter series obviously is phenomenal, but if you really read the books before you watch the movies, you're going to be like, man, there's a lot missing.
There's a lot.
There's a lot missing. But you go back to one of the first movies that I remember knowing that Kit is eating.
Oh, hold on. All right. Give us one second. Okay. Before we were rudely interrupted. Okay. So what were you going to say?
So one of the first movies I remember knowing that it was a book adaptation was The Shining.
Nice.
And The Shining is probably one of the scariest movies I saw as a kid.
Yeah.
I think I've watched it one more time since then, but I remember reading about it. And if you guys are familiar with Stephen King's work, it's probably one of his best books.
Yeah. It's up there.
You know what I mean? It's definitely maybe top five.
Definitely. Right? Yeah.
He absolutely hated that movie.
Yeah. He despises that movie.
The screenwriter, the director, and the studio completely changed the story, and he absolutely despised it. It was one of his, like, he was literally the biggest critic for that movie, and it was, cinematically, it was a success in the box office. Everybody across the world loved that movie.
And it's still watched to this day, and some people, like you said, consider it one of the scariest movies ever made. Jack Nicholson's performance is legendary in that movie. And Stanley Kubrick, his vision for it was just insane, but it wasn't Stephen King's vision for it. Mm-hmm. And like he even went so far, and this is where it gets kind of funny. So in the movie, they drive just a regular yellow car. In the book, they drive a yellow like Volkswagen. Mm-hmm. At the very end of the movie, when the caretaker's driving to the hotel, you see an accident and it's a yellow Volkswagen crushed under a truck. And everybody was like, good God, like Kubrick was really just saying like what were the conversations that led Kubrick to being like, dude, I'm going to just bash King's like original vision for this thing. But then now flash forward to a couple of years ago, Dr. Sleep comes out, the sequel that Stephen King wrote to The Shining, not the movie, but his own novel. And it's a great book. That's an awesome book. The screenwriter had the impossible job of, one, adapting the book as a book, but also trying to adapt the movie as well into it, because the ending of The Shining and the ending of the book are two completely different things. I mean, what happens at the end of The Shining in the book is not even close to what happens at the end in the movie. And so the screenwriter had the craziest job, and I think he pulled it off perfectly, to where he blended both the movie and the novels together to make a really successful sequel, which, again, nobody really saw that. Mm-hmm. Did you see Dr. Sleep?
I did not.
Yeah, a lot of people skipped that one.
Yeah, I know who was acting in it, and I wanted to see it, but I'm good.
I think you should. It's good. Ewan McGregor nails the part.
I need to go and watch it. I just need to work up the nerve and watch it during the day.
I watched the light during the day. All the lights were on when I watched.
So, okay, now go back to another, literally probably one of the best trilogies ever made.
Yeah.
One of the most famous movies and books, one of the famous trilogy books ever written. Lord of the Rings.
Lord of the Rings.
Peter Jackson took Tolkien's vision and his book and brought it to the screen in an epic trilogy. And he did it very well, to the point where Tolkien fans were even applauding the work that Jackson did with that movie.
Yes.
With those movies. So then fast forward, the success of the Lord of the Rings, you have the Hobbit series.
Uh-oh, here we go.
Okay. 397 page book split into three parts.
Yes.
Most of it thrown out, characters added, action sequences. Like, it was completely different than what Tolkien had in his book.
Yeah, it was.
Tolkien critics went berserk. And if you guys aren't familiar with Tolkien's work, he set the bar, and every fantasy world writer is literally copying the pages out of his book.
Yeah, he created a language and then said, oh, I should create a culture now for this. And then he creates an entire legend, an entire, like, almost biblical-esque story of the history of this world that he creates. And in the middle of it all is the story of the Hobbit and the Lord of the Rings.
Yeah.
And it's the Lord of the Rings. And I remember I read the second book. I didn't read the first or the last, but I read the second Lord of the Rings, the Two Towers. And it was like, whoa, this is really awesome. And then I watched the movie and I was taken aback, because the climax of the second book, spoiler alert, is Shelob's lair. Whenever Frodo and Sam go in to see Shelob, and it was intense. And I remember going, oh my God, a giant spider. This is going to be the coolest sequence ever. You watch the Two Towers, you get to the end of the movie, and then it ends, and you're just like, why did they not put it in there? So here's where the genius and the adaptation and the smartness of the writing team goes. They looked at the timeline of the story, and they said, okay, this is actually happening the same time this was happening in the third book. So we can just go boom, and then there we go. So they adapted it so well that they even went deeper into the timeline to make sure it all made perfect sense, to where in the Two Towers it ends, and then the third movie you get Shelob's lair. And I agree, that's probably one of the more successful book. I mean, I don't know if successful. It's one of the best, I think.
I think so. It really is. I mean, and like I Googled before we sat down and started talking about it, like I was Googling best book adaptations, and that's at the top of the list, along with The Godfather and some other handful of movies.
The Godfather now, though.
don't let me get started.
Don't let me get started on The Godfather. But The Godfather is very interesting, because, fun fact, Francis Ford Coppola won Best Adapted Screenplay. Him and Mario Puzo won Best Adapted Screenplay twice for the same book. That's how well and that's how good the Godfather book is. That mm-hmm. in the middle of the book, you have Vito Andolini's or Vito Corleone's story of him rising to power, which is the Godfather Part Two, and they cut back and forth and everything. It was so good, and they adapted it so well, the Academy gave them Best Adapted Screenplay after they already gave him Best Adapted Screenplay for the first movie. But there is a part in the Godfather book that as you're reading it, you're going, oh my gosh, this is a lot of the book. Okay, so do you remember Sonny was having an affair with that woman?
Yeah.
Okay. Okay, spoiler alert, Sonny was having an affair. Anyways, in the book, you find out that Sonny's the only man, I know this is graphic, but he's the only man who can please her because of his, you know, anyways. And a guy that she's trying to get with is a doctor, and he says, oh my gosh, you have a problem. I know somebody who can do surgery on you to where any man could please you. And she's like, oh wow, that'd be great. And I'm reading it going, what the hell does this have to do with the Godfather? Has nothing to do with it. And it was a good chunk of the book. And even Coppola says it's like a 90-page stretch about this girl to where he almost didn't want to do it because he was so confused as to why that's there. And ultimately, he said he read it again, and then he looked at the father, the sons, and the family. And he says, there's the story. That's the story. He took all of that other stuff out. But it's one of those things you're reading and you're like,
but you can't blame him. And you know, can't
blame him. Yeah.
That brings up a great point. I mean, any author who is releasing an epic tale like that on a book can turn waking up in the morning, pouring, making a cup of coffee, making breakfast into a 100-page ordeal. Yeah. And it can be the most detailed, immersive 100 pages about making a cup of coffee and some eggs in the morning after you wake up that you ever read. And you'll be page turning everything, right? How do you translate that into a movie?
You can't.
You can't.
No,
that's a 3-minute scene. That's a 3-minute clip.
Yep.
You know, if that.
Like the opening shot of The Hunt for the Red October is Sean Connery's character looking out at the harbor before they go out to sea. In the book, that's like 15 pages
of descriptions.
His whole backstory is there in the eyes. And all the director had, I think it was McTurin, had to just say, just look. And we got to get all of that right now because we can't get anything else. I can't have you look at the camera and go, okay, I was raised by this person. I was the, you know what I mean? So I thought that was a successful move for them to do.
So basically what we're saying, and correct me if I'm wrong, like the successful book adaptation movies, the ones that we just mentioned, and there's many more, trust me, there's a whole lot of other slew of movies that are adapted from books that are very well made, are the ones that the screenwriters in the studios take their time with. They collaborate with the authors if they're able to.
Yeah, if they're able to.
But they actually do a good job into really digging into the story and making sure they're doing it right. Mm-hmm. Now, the ones that go wrong.
Uh-oh. Which ones?
Let's talk about the Divergent series. Let's talk about the Twilight saga.
Yeah, what?
Let's talk about freaking City of Bones. All these little teen bopper, the Vampire Academy, all these little teen bopper movies that came out based off this huge rush of teen novels.
Yeah.
And if you actually go back and read the Twilight series, I actually read some of the books. I was dating a girl at the time. This was years before I met my wife.
Likely stars.
I was dating this girl at the time. I was in the military. We were both stationed in Germany. We were dating. And she was very into these movies and into the books. Mm-hmm. And she would finish one and she would hand it to me. And she'd be like, you need to read this. I don't want to read this crap. Right? Yeah. You know? But because I was a young kid, you know.
I'm in love.
You know, I'll do it. And then at first I started reading them like, okay, yeah, just to make her happy. But then I started getting into the story.
Oh, my gosh.
And then I started getting into, like, you know, Stephanie Meyer did a hell of a job writing those books. They're really good. It's a really good series.
Yeah.
And then the movie comes out. At the time, she's all excited to go watch it.
So was everyone else.
So was every other 15-year-old girl and older woman who's into the books. And it was horrible.
It was awful.
It was awful. And I remember reading, I just read a review on why it's one of the worst book adaptations. And it's like, it set the bar so low for the saga that the other following movies didn't even have to, they didn't even come close to exceeding it, because it was just, nobody wanted it to happen.
Yeah. It became a joke with how bad it was. And even the directors knew, the screen, everybody on that production knew, this is not good. Like, we're not doing the best job that we could possibly be doing with these stories.
Yeah.
And I think that's a studio coming in saying, get this movie out now.
They wanted glamour. They wanted glitz. They wanted the hottest, young actors in Hollywood playing these roles, because they wanted the teen boppers to hang posters on their walls.
They wanted that Harry Potter money.
They wanted that Harry Potter money. That's what they wanted. They rushed it and they got that. One more series that really grinds my gears.
Uh-oh, which one?
Again, going back to when I was in the military. I have a love affair with Greek mythology and history. Mm-hmm. I love reading into the history of the world and learning about different cultures and especially Greek mythology. So when I was deployed, I came across this, and I remember came across this book, Percy Jackson, The Lightning Thief.
Yeah.
By Rick Riordan. Teenage novel. Yes. Right? Full of Greek mythology, full of teenage adventures, but it was so good. And because I'm obsessive with some things, I read that book and I wanted to read all the other ones to follow.
Yeah.
Then they made the movie.
Ugh.
And I wanted to throw something at the movie screen.
They made two of those things.
They made two of those movies. They were horrible. Absolutely horrible. So horrible, Pierce Brosnan said, you know what? I ain't doing the second one.
Yeah.
Just walked away.
I remember I never saw the first one. I just remember when I started working at HEB, 100 years ago, they had it on 11. In the break room. Don't tell anybody that. They had it on in the break room. And I just remember watching a little bit of it going, really? This is not. And here's the crazy thing. That movie was supposed to be good. That movie was supposed to be huge. The cast was insane. You had Chris Columbus directing it, and he had already done the first two Harry Potter movies. And so the studio was like, we have another, again, this is another Harry Potter
series. And it really is. If you go back and look at the novels that Rick Riordan, and I say his last name wrong, because it's weirdly spelled, Rick Riordan, Riordan. If you read them and you're looking at them, they are intense books.
Yeah.
And they are very well written. There's so much source material. If Chris Columbus could have just taken his time and actually made the movies and adapted the screenplays from the books, mm-hmm. and maybe even, collaborated with Rick, it would have been so much better. And we probably could have had a rival series to Harry Potter. But I also think that maybe studios didn't want that.
I think they did. I think, again, it was that time.
Riding that wave.
It was the early 2010s, 11, mm-hmm. 12. That was when you had the Harry Potter series was coming out. Twilight was on the rise. You had Divergent. You had the Hunger Games. All that was starting to come out. And the first Hunger Games was not bad. That was actually a pretty decent movie. Yeah.
And I actually like those adaptations. Yeah. There's a lot of key points from those movies, mm-hmm. That I don't like. Specifically with the second and third, because they could have, they left that the key part out, but that's another discussion.
We'll talk about that one day. But that era was really crazy, to where, we get to Chaos Walking, which came out this year. That was supposed to be there.
That was supposed to be within that, 2015, 2016?
Yeah, but it was late. The studios will sometimes be like, oh my gosh, we have the best book. We need to. People will come and watch it. Don't worry about if it's good or not. People are going to come and watch it. There you go. You got your Twilight, your Percy Jackson. But then sometimes you get a studio that's like, oh my gosh, this is great. Let's take our time. let's hire a good director, a good screenwriter, and then you get Chronicles of Narnia, The Lion, the Witch, the Wardrobe, yeah. which was freaking amazing.
Amazing.
That movie was so good. And then the problem with the second movie, in my opinion, was it came out in a very busy summer. It came out in 2008, which was the most insane. Like nobody, if you remember 2008, Iron Man, Hulk, Incredible Hulk, Indiana Jones, and The Dark Knight, Wall-E. Like it was, there was too much going on in that summer of 2008 to where the movie was kind of skipped over. And I didn't watch it. It was Prince Caspian. I didn't watch it when it came out in theaters. But I remember people saying, it's really good. It's a really good movie. And I watched it a couple of years later and I was like, that movie was badass. I know I shouldn't say that about a kid's movie, but Prince Caspian is a badass movie. And unfortunately, they made one more and that was it. And you had a whole 7-book series they could have done, but they only were able to do 3 of these things. And it's funny how it's like, oh my gosh, it's so good. But if no one goes to see it, they're never going to make any more of these movies.
Exactly.
And so it's really sad.
But I think now we're into an age where you have streaming mongols like Netflix, Amazon, HBO Max now with Warner Brothers, who are now going to be reaching into that pot and bringing to life a lot of those stories. Like you see it now with The Witcher.
Yeah.
That Netflix is doing. The Witcher has so much source material, so much. Like it is insanely. The source material for Witcher overshadows Game of Thrones tenfold.
Yeah.
And the first season, I wasn't a big fan of it, but a lot of people like it.
Yeah.
Second season.
And they're doing another one.
They're doing a second season, not because they need to, not because the first season was such a big success, but because they can.
Yeah. And that's the crazy thing about
they can.
And you know,
and then you have Queen's Gambit, which I had never even heard of.
Me neither.
You know, it was a book written in the 80s.
It was in the 80s, yeah.
Written in the 80s. It was New York Times. It was on the New York Times bestseller list for a very limited amount of time.
And then it just passes away into existence until last year.
And then somebody found it and decided to bring it back to life with Queen's Gambit on Netflix. And then all of a sudden, it's again at the top of the New York bestsellers list. But I actually watched that series. I go back, I read the book, and the book is just amazing. But in my mind, I'm playing the series in my head as I'm reading the book, and it's almost going side by side.
That's awesome.
So the benefits of our character-driven 45-minute to an hour episode series that we get from Netflix, HBO, Amazon. Now we're seeing it from Paramount and all these other, you know, big studios. I think they're able now to take their time and actually tell these stories the way they need to be told.
Exactly. Which, okay, going back to Jack Ryan, when I heard it was a series, I was like, that's the best way to do a Tom Clancy novel is to stretch it out over a 10, 11 episode series, hour long episodes, and they didn't do it. But I agree, though, that this new way of storytelling is the best way to do your book adaptations. Like going back to, you know, even going to Ready Player One, as amazing as that
amazing movie,
as that movie is, the book is even better than the movie. But here's the crazy voodoo, you know, voodoo witchcraft that they did with the book and the movie.
They had Spielberg.
But they realized early on, and Ernest Cline helped also write the screenplay, was, okay, there's stuff in this book that we cannot do in the movie. Yeah. There's explanations. There's all this connectivity of what's going on, how everything links together, that you can't have your guy just stop and say, okay, this is what's going on.
Yeah.
You can't do that. So they rewrote the movie pretty much and still called it Ready Player One, but it was still very good. The gist of the story was there, to where I tell people, you can watch the movie and you can read the book and it's not taken. You're not taking away anything from either of them.
No,
they're still really
the
good.
The endings are completely different. The tasks or obstacles are completely different.
Completely different. Yeah.
But the base storyline for the movie and the book are the same.
Yeah.
And it's super immersive. The movie is just as immersive as the book. And it's a beautiful thing because you can lose yourself in both.
Which I wasn't expecting when I saw the movie.
Absolutely not.
even as I was reading the book, I remember thinking, like, there's no way they can do this. Like, how can you do that? And then you realize they can't. They knew that right away. We can't do some of this stuff. And then we get to the second book. You realize that he was like, okay.
Well, was showing out.
We can do this. Book. We can do this in the movie because we did it. All right, I could do this. And then now he's – anyways. Okay, but Spielberg, Jurassic Park. Again, a book adaptation to where the movie is just one of the best movies ever. You know, it's loved. It's a huge classic, you know, of a movie. Yeah. The book and the movie are nothing alike. Like, nothing alike. To where I read the book years later, and I was like, let me try this out. I was already out of college. I was already like, okay, let me read this book. I went to college, yeah, believe it or not. And I'm reading the book. And in my mind, I'm thinking it's not going to be as entertaining because I'm comparing it to the movie. Within the first few chapters of the book, you're like, what movie? It doesn't. And then I was completely just blown away about how amazing that book was. And the beauty of it was the book and the movie didn't take anything away from each other. Oh, it was like, yeah, cool. I love the movie, but read the book. It's just as good as the movie, but it's different. And I love that.
So we say all this, and we're talking about all these different. I mean, and it sounds like we're jumping, but we're not. I mean, we're making a clear cut case. Successful book adaptations to movies are the ones that they take their times with.
Yes,
the ones that are a flop are the ones that they're trying to ride that wave of popularity that we saw with the Teen Bop trilogies. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But these epic stories that we got told in books, but on movies, are the ones that will live with us forever.
Yes.
And I can tell you right now, I didn't know Jurassic Park was a book until I saw the movie.
Yeah. I didn't know that either. Yeah.
You know what I mean? I didn't know Godfather was a book until I saw the movie.
Yeah.
I knew The Shining was a book.
Everybody knows The Shining.
Everybody knows Stephen King.
Everybody knows Stephen King. Yeah.
I knew Lord of the Rings was a book. Everybody knows Tolkien.
Yeah.
I didn't know Ready Player One was a book until I saw the movie.
Okay.
And then I read the book and I fell in love with Ernest Cline.
Yeah.
And I've read the second book. I can't wait till Spielberg makes the second movie.
He's not going to make the second. Because unfortunately, nobody else saw Ready Player One except for you and me. Like, I'm just going to say that. Like, nobody else saw Ready Player One. But no, I agree, though.
I think Spielberg's at the point now, if he walks into any studio and say, hey, I want to make this movie, they're going to be like, all right.
Although, okay, fun fact. I know we're going to segue. Fun fact. He said it was almost impossible for him to get Lincoln made, to get that greenlit.
Really?
Yeah. He said the studios were kind of like, you know, it's a historical movie. And he was thinking, and they almost got to the point where he said, okay, maybe I could just do like an HBO series then. And then he said, finally, I got the green light to do the movie. And even George Lucas with Red Tails, that was the same year. He said it was almost equally impossible for him to get that movie. Well, greenlit. And so, but anyway, Lincoln, that's a whole other.
I mean, Lincoln and Red Tails, those are stories you really can't deviate from.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? True. Like the story of, like, if you saw Lincoln, the vampire hunter, which I thought was absolutely stupid.
I never saw that. I didn't want to see that.
That's an adaptation from a graphic novel.
Yeah. No, that's a book. That was a novel. That's
a novel.
I forget that guy's name, but he wrote Pride and Prejudice and Zombies, and then he wrote Abraham Lincoln.
Anyway. Vampire. But, you know, those stories you can't really deviate from. I mean, the Red Tails was a true story that hit home for a lot of people and really was kind of split down the middle. Some people liked it, some people didn't.
Yeah.
But I'm pretty serious, though. I think Spielberg's at a point in time where he can be literally like, hey, I'm going to make this movie.
Yeah.
And then be like, okay, cool.
You know, going back to Lincoln.
Okay.
I remember a story that when he asked Tony Kushner to adapt the screenplay, and Tony Kushner wrote Munich, which is a great movie. So when Tony Kushner was adapting the screenplay for Lincoln, it was actually based off a book called Team of Rivals Godwin. I'm in trouble for not remembering her name. Hey, stop that. My dog's scratching him here. So he actually adapted the entire book. And there's a picture of Spielberg reading it. And he's smiling because he says it was like 500 pages of a script. And he goes, there's no way I'm going to be able to do this. So what they did instead was they looked at the story and they figured out, okay, this 100-page stretch of him trying to pass the 14th Amendment is the most exciting part of this entire story. Mm-hmm. And then they said, let's do this part of the movies. And then they expanded on that to make that the movie. And they adapt. And so it does say adapted, but in the same time, you're kind of like, yeah, you just took like,
you took a portion of it
and you made it into the movie. And it's a great movie. It's really an amazing movie.
It is a fantastic movie. I've been wanting to do this episode for a while, talking about screen adaptations, and I kind of didn't know where we're going to go with it.
Yeah, me neither.
But I'm really happy with where we went with it.
Yeah, I'm glad we're able to talk about movies that I'm like, oh yeah, was that good? No, it wasn't good.
Yeah, so I challenge everybody, like, you know, what are some of your favorite books and favorite movies? And mm-hmm. what are some books that you wish they would turn into movies?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like for me, I'm obsessed with the High Republic books that Lucasfilm is releasing.
Yeah.
I'm obsessed with that storyline. I can't wait until they decide to pull the trigger and actually make either series or movies about that storyline. And I can't wait to see how they adapt the story written by those amazing team of authors.
Yeah.
You know, that's one series that I can't wait for. Yeah, I mean, there's so many out there that I just want to see made. One of my other favorite adaptations is Ender's Game. Yeah. Absolutely love that movie. Read the book, completely different.
Yeah, completely different. I didn't see the movie because I liked the book. I know that's a horrible reason why not to. The reason I didn't want to watch without remorse. You know, one of the books, okay, I'm looking at my bookshelf. I have a nice little bookshelf in my house right now. Dan Brown wrote The Da Vinci Code. Great, great movie.
Love it.
Great book. They adapted it. Angels and Demons, just as good.
Are you going to say what I think you're going to say?
What? Which one? No. The one that I want them to adapt is a book called Deception Point that he wrote.
I thought you were going to say Lost Symbol.
No. Lost. Was that the one?
That was the third one.
That was the American. I didn't like that one.
Oh,
that wasn't too crazy.
Come on.
Because with his books, like the twist at the end, you're always like, what? That's great. With that one, I figured the twist out within the first two chapters. But anyways, with Deception Point, that was it's such a fun adventure action movie about like the story of like the origins of life. Are we alone in the universe? Is there a God? And it's, I mean, he did another one called Origins as well. It was, but this one was a meteorite.
Origins is the new one. That's the one he did.
Yeah.
And that book is so well written.
That was a weird book.
It was so weird, but it was so awesome.
Yeah. But I think the Robert Langdon series is dead. I think they're not going to do any more Robert Langdon ones.
Which is unfortunate because I think Tom Hanks as Robert Langdon was like meant to be.
And see, my sister was like, I hated Tom Hanks as Robert Langdon.
What?
She said Brad Pitt was supposed to play him. Because if you read the book, the way they describe him, it's like, okay, he's like a handsome, like almost like a Brad Pitt guy. And then you get Tom Hanks, you know? so you're like, okay. But Tom Hanks is still like one of the best actors in history. So yeah, it made sense. But no, Deception Point is a book that I want them to adapt. I don't think anyone's ever going to adapt. And so there's other books out there that I've been like, oh, this would be so cool. But it's like, there's nobody will ever like pick this thing up. What's another? I wrote a list of movies that are of books that are like the adaptations. So like, here's another funny thing. So you have different versions of the same book. Little Women, for instance, has been adapted so many times to movies, and they even did a whole modernized TV show of it. And then just a couple of years ago, they did a new one, which was a great movie, by the way. That was an awesome adaptation of Little Women. And it's almost like, you know, plays by Shakespeare, where every generation will redo Hamlet. Somebody will redo Hamlet. Somebody will redo Romeo and Juliet. It's the same thing, but they just put their own twist on there. But here's the catch, though. With theater plays, you can't change any of the lines. You can't change any of that, because what the stage writer wrote is the Bible, pretty much. You can't deviate from that. Whereas in books and movies, you can go, we can change that because that's not going to work. So I like the fact that sometimes every generation you'll see a new movie, almost a remake. Yeah, but then at the same time, it's like
it's a new adaptation.
It's a new adaptation of it. Yeah. Like Little Women's one of those that sticks out to me, and even Pride and Prejudice, like those the Jane Austen books are like every seems like every generation there's some that are like
so one book that I've always wanted them to make a movie about, and it this book changed the way I looked at the world when I was in high school. Fahrenheit 451.
Oh, okay, yeah.
So in 2018, when HBO said, hey, we're making a Fahrenheit 451 movie.
With Michael Shannon.
Michael Shannon, Michael B. Jordan. It's like, what? Like, I'm like, what? Where did this come from? Like, what is going on?
So how was it, though? I didn't see that one.
I loved it.
It was awesome?
I loved it. It was amazing. It was exactly, it was, for me, it was like, from what I could remember from the book. Like, remember, I read this book years ago when I was in high school. I mean, you're talking 15 plus years ago. You know, maybe 15 plus years ago, easily. And so from what I can remember from the book, this movie was very well made, very well written, and the screenplay was very well adapted, and I absolutely loved it, man.
And plus, you had Michael B. Jordan and Michael Shannon as your two main guys.
It was directed by Ramin Barani. Barani, B-A-H-R-A-N-I.
Something like that, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, this movie was awesome. And it scored horribly on Rotten Tomatoes. Yeah. I don't trust Rotten Tomatoes at all. That's just me.
Yeah, it's so funny how, like, and okay, so that brings up another topic. Should you read the book before you watch the movie? Or should you just wait to read the book?
I don't know, man. that's for me, I'm that person that read the books after the movies.
Okay.
In terms of certain books. The Harry Potter series, I read those before I saw the movies. The Hunger Games series, I saw the movies, I went back and read the books.
Okay.
Absolutely loved them all. Fahrenheit 451. Obviously, I read the book first. We finally watched the movie. I didn't read Lord of the Rings. Did not have the time. Like, those books are thick.
Or the attention span. For me, it's the attention span.
The attention span.
How much is detailed?
Dude, it's like one chapter, you're looking at what happens with Frodo and at this scene. The next chapter, it's literally 100 pages of Sam looking at the same scene Frodo was, but through his eyes. Like, it's so detailed, and the way Tolkien tells that story is absolutely amazing.
Oh yeah.
But I don't have the attention span. Me neither.
I've never.
But there's a lot of movies out there that I watched, and then I went back and read the books, like Ready Player One. You know, so for me, the answer to your question, it depends on you, as the viewer or reader. You know, if you're an avid reader, then read the books, because you're probably going to read it first anyway, and then you'll go and watch the movies. But if you love watching movies, watch the movies, then go back and read the book. Like, it to me, it doesn't matter.
See, I'm a guy, again, it's everyone's different. I love to read it before I watch it. Unless it's been like Hunt for October, all those other Tom Clancy novels have been out way before. But most of the time I will read the book before I watch the movie. I don't know why I do that. I don't know if it's like, if I read it afterward, I'm only reading it because the movie came out. Whereas if I read it before, I could be like, oh, I already read them. You know what I mean? Like, that's just such a stupid way to think about it.
My fear is, for me, is like, if I read the book and I absolutely love the book,
yeah,
I'm going to be disappointed with the movie.
Yeah.
But I've also found myself in situations where, like, if I watch the movie and I was like, this is freaking stupid. Mm-hmm. But then I find the book, I'm like, yeah, let me give it a shot. I absolutely love the book. Like, there's different, it's different for everybody. And I think you got to find what works best for you. And I think a lot of our listeners are probably the ones who read the book first and then watch the movie. And I'm the only outlier. But it's okay. I honestly don't think it doesn't matter how you do it. As long as you yourself, as a viewer or listener or reader, enjoys whatever you're reading or watching.
Yeah, I agree. I agree 100%. And yeah, I know this podcast was kind of everywhere today. We talked about a lot of stuff.
But it's okay.
But it's fun. It's great to talk about it. So Without Remorse was good, but they missed a great opportunity Without Remorse.
I'm going to give it a 3.5 out of 5.
I'm going to give that one about a 3.5. 3.5 out of 5 as well.
I know we didn't really review it properly.
Oops.
Sorry. But it's still fairly new. Not a lot of people have watched it.
Yeah.
And honestly, we can't really review it without giving away the whole story, because the story is really that simple. And
yeah, I mean, literally what we said at the beginning, that is the story.
That is literally the synopsis. Like, we elaborate on it more, we're going to give away the entire movie. It sounds bad that we're saying it like that, but it's the truth. But like I said, it's not about the story, the actors, yep, the action sequences, the performances that Michael B. Jordan gives, like, it all makes the movie worth it.
And I agree.
It fits in with what they're doing with the Jack Ryan series.
Okay, that's what I was going to say. That there is a post-credit scene, which is awesome, because it's like, ooh, they could, like, do something freaking amazing with this thing. But I would have thrown in a line with him saying, like, oh, there's somebody I want you to meet tomorrow. And he hands him the card, and then he flips it over and it says Jack Ryan on there. That would have just been like the best. I would have been like, oh my God, they're going to freaking do that.
I would have, because in that movie, they connect the two worlds with Jack Greer.
With
Jim Greer, yeah, by bringing his niece into the fold, which obviously he's disconnected with because she's like, yeah, whatever you say. Yeah. But I would have been happy if he would have been like, someone I want you to meet, hands of thing. It's Jim Greer, a name that he recognizes, you know, someone that he knows is related to someone he trusts.
Yeah, okay. That would have been better.
I think that would have been cool. But again, I give it a 3.5 out of 4 just because, like you said, I wanted to see more complexity to the story.
And again, I think I'm spoiled with, like, I'm watching The Hunt for the Red October right before you came over, and there's a lot of characters, there's a lot at stake, and everyone has, like, everyone's doing their own thing, and they're trying to make this all work. Whereas with this one, it was like, you have one character, you have your supporting cast, but it's all about him in this movie. Mm-hmm. And again, I enjoyed it. I thought I wasn't going to, but I did. So yeah, 3.5 out of 5 is what I give that one.
Awesome.
But yeah, hopefully y'all were entertained by this. We just kind of rambled. Sorry guys, but thank you so much for listening.
It's okay to ramble every once in a while.
Yeah. We'll be back next week with another great topic. I'm James.
And I'm Rudy.
And take care.